We hope and trust that you will find this Torah in Motion program meaningful. Through these programs, Torah in Motion encourages discussion, debate, and education about the most important issues facing Jews and Judaism today. Together, we can focus on creating religious commitment through an honest and sophisticated encounter with topics that are relevant to being Jewish in the modern world. For more information about this and other Torah in Motion programs, please visit the website at www.torahinmotion.org.
I'd like to welcome everybody to tonight's program, which is another in a series of programs being run by Torah in Motion this year. First of all, we want to thank the friendly confines of Beth Jacob once again for hosting this and many other exciting programs in our community. As well, we wanted to alert people to our November 2nd conference, which is coming up soon, and a list of really wonderful speakers on that program, and details are in a flyer which you'll find outside the door. If people are interested in registering for that conference, that can be done tonight after the lecture. It's my pleasure once again to introduce Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardozo, who's the founder of the Cardozo School in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Cardozo originally is from Holland. He received his smicha from Gateshead Talmudic College in northern England. He has a doctorate in philosophy. He has lectured in many countries the world over and is the author of several extremely well-received books, including The Mind of God, Judaism on Trial, From Speech and Silence, and his newest book, which is called Halacha, A Symphony, Tolerance, and the Jewish Tradition. Rabbi Cardozo's topic for this evening is Rescuing God and Halacha, the struggle for relevance in contemporary Judaism. Won't you please welcome Rabbi Cardozo.
Good evening, everybody. Erev Tov, as we say in Ivrit. I would first of all like to thank Professor Malamed and Rabbi Jay Gelman for allowing me here to speak tonight to all of you. I have met a few of you already yesterday morning, and I feel privileged to have the opportunity to speak once more. I also want to thank two other people. I'm not sure if they're here, yes or no, but I feel an emotional need to mention that, and that is, first of all, Mrs. Michelle Kahn, who was very instrumental in bringing me here to Toronto, and I want to thank her for that. And my dear friend Stephen Rosen, an old friend of mine who has also been looking after me very well in the last few days, spending Shabbat together and giving me again the opportunity to meet once more the Toronto community. I want to speak tonight to you on a very, in my opinion, disturbing topic. Disturbing in the sense that I am very worried about what happens in the Orthodox Jewish world. And I'm going tonight to speak my mind about this, but I also want you to know that I will do this, obviously, with the greatest amount of respect for the Orthodox world. I'm part of it. I teach in that world. I love that world. And nothing is more close to me, perhaps besides my family, than this very world. And it is because of that reason that I sometimes experience sleepless nights about the future of the Orthodox Jewish world. And sometimes one has to be honest enough to speak about this, even when it is painful, because staying silent is not going to happen and to help anybody. And I think it is only an important commandment, which I believe is a Jewish commandment, to have some self-critique, to look once more in our own world and to try to understand what perhaps is wrong, and to try to learn our sources properly as we find them in our Chumash, in our Torah, in our Mishnah, in our Gemara, the Talmud, the Midrash, and to draw from there all the necessary kind of ingredients to perhaps rebuild, which somehow got lost somewhere, in my opinion. But I tell you, with pain in my heart. In Hebrew we would say, halavai, may it be that there was no need even to speak about this topic. But as a teacher for more than nearly 30 years, and being part of that world, and what I mean by that is being part of the modern Orthodox world, and in some sense also being part of the Haredi world, the ultra-Orthodox world, and looking inside, trying to understand, to analyze, one sometimes against one's wishes has to draw conclusions and then to say, okay, if that's the way how it is, what can I, as a Jew, as a religious teacher, do about this to make other people aware and perhaps to create a better condition for the future, and especially for our children and grandchildren. And that is why I'm going to speak honestly, respectfully, but I'm going to deal with some issues which we need to speak about. In my opinion, and I speak, I dare to say, with a lot of experience, we have a major problem in the way in which the Orthodox Jewish world today deals with the world of the halakha, of Jewish law. And I think we all are aware what halakha is. It's not American law. It's not Roman law. It is something much deeper, much faster, much broader. Because we all know quite well that that law, that halakha of ours, is one which does not only interfere in our social life, in our financial life, but also in our private lives. In the most private moments of our lives, at home, in marriage, relationships, matters of integrity, the halakha interferes, demands, commands. It touches every, the most even trivial issue of human existence. That American law does not do. Baruch Hashem. But Jewish law does. And it is therefore crucial to understand what this halakha is, how we need to relate to it, and perhaps what went wrong within our community in the way we related to it. It is always very dangerous to somehow start to separate different communities within the Orthodox world. I hate doing this. But for the sake of clarity, I'm going to make use of two words. And I want you to know that they overlap, and that it is not as black-white as I am going to position it tonight, purely because if I would not do that, there's no way of discussing the issue. We speak about what we call today the modern Orthodox world on one side, and we speak about the Haredi world, normally translated as ultra-Orthodox world on the other side. Now, we know quite well that these are distinctions which are not at all clear. I don't know exactly what it means when people say modern orthodoxy. I also do not know exactly what it means when people speak about Haredi orthodoxy. It's not very clear where exactly the borderlines are. Baruch Hashem. But there is a distinctive difference there. One, we would say, and this is an oversimplification, no doubt, that the modern Orthodox world is indeed more open to our general society, interacts with the modern world on many different levels, financially, in the academic world. It is more open to what this world has to offer. It does not cut itself so much off from that world. Tries, in fact, to cooperate with this world and perhaps even to allow certain elements of that world to come into the Jewish community, into the Orthodox Jewish community. On the other side, we have what is then called, for the lack of a better word, the Haredi world, the ultra-Orthodox world, which is known, and to be honest, this is not completely fair either, to be more closed in. It is a world which has very little relationship in general with the general world. It lives in its own world. It's very powerful. In many ways, it was the world which survived even the Holocaust, at least in its ideological sense of the word. And it has its own way of thinking about matters. And no doubt it has created over the years many walls between the outside world and the Jewish world. In my opinion, personally, but this is not so much the topic tonight, we need both these worlds. There's a need for modern orthodoxy, and there's a need for ultra-orthodoxy. Somehow, and I would very much like to make that point, if they just would work together a little better, and if they would learn from each other, we could create perhaps a better condition without asking them to compromise on their own ideologies. But what I would like to discuss tonight is their attitude towards halacha. And paradoxically, we must come to the conclusion, and again I can only state that in very general terms, there is no time really to go into all the details, that both of these particular communities struggle with the position of halacha, and what I mean by that is with the position of its ideology, of what this halacha is really all about, or what this halacha should be all about. Modern orthodoxy has a tendency sometimes, and again, this is a too general statement, but that is definitely mentioned even by modern Orthodox thinkers, including people like our famous Rabbi Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that it has not always given enough attention to halachic observance. That sometimes it has been very lenient in its ways how it deals with the requirements of halacha, and sometimes it even makes an impression that it does not always take it too serious. That there's a certain way of dealing with that halacha, which is perhaps not living up exactly to its demands. As I said before, I'm not the first one to say this. Reading those people in that world, who are the thinkers over there, like Rabbi Soloveitchik, like Rabbi Lamb, and others, they have indeed mentioned themselves this problem. In a few occasions, Rabbi Soloveitchik in his works protests against that. He would like to see that there would be more commitment to every prat uprat, every halachic issue, as the Shulchan Aruch, our Codex of Jewish Law, requires from us, and that there should be more emphasis on this. I don't know if you are aware of this, but if you look into the modern Orthodox world, and again, it's very dangerous to use that word, because modern Orthodoxy means many different things by now. We have on one side somebody like Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch in the 19th century, and I don't think anybody can say there was any leniency on halacha. But there was still the concept of Torah in Derech Eretz, the idea of interacting with the world out there. We have a Rabbi Cook. We have a few more people like that who obviously were extremely serious about the halacha and every detail, and they wrote about it. But it is also true that the general community has not dealt with the halacha as serious as perhaps it is demanding from us. Looking in the works of modern Orthodoxy, you will, for example, see that there is a certain embarrassment with halacha. Before Rabbi Soloveitchik, nobody ever wrote about the ideology of halacha from the perspective of modern Orthodoxy. If you look around, you will see that what most of its leaders did was they spoke about the beauty of the Jewish tradition more in terms of the Nevi'im, of the prophets, of the universal mission of the Jewish tradition, which no doubt is there, than when they started to speak about the little details of the halacha. How much wine do you have to drink from your wine cup on Friday night? How particular you have to be that your tefillin are exactly square? All these little details, which after all are part of the Shulchan Aruch. They didn't know exactly how to understand that and how to defend that. Because people would indeed ask, what is the religious meaning of being so particular? On Pesach night, we are asked to eat a matzah. But that's not good enough. We are being told to eat a kesayit, a certain amount. And if you look into our halachic works, like those of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, or anybody else, they will tell you exactly how much this is. How much gram of matzah do you have to eat? And then there is another great halachic authority who would disagree with him and say, no, it's a few grams more. And then, and I'm the kind of skeptical person there, I look from outside and I ask myself indeed the question, what has this issue to do with religion? A few grams more? A few grams less? Does that make any difference in the way how we relate to God? And the halacha says yes. And for a long time we did not know where to put this. And the first one who really spoke out on this issue, I come later back to this, was indeed Rabbi Soloveitchik. In his beautiful work, but difficult work to read, Ish HaHalacha, the halachic man, he tries to deal with all these issues. And he creates a masterful, let's say, plan, an outlook of the halachic man where everything fits in, nearly from a mathematical point of view. But up till that moment, very few people would ever write about this topic. There was a certain silence about this. Let's not discuss this matter because we really don't know how to defend these issues. Let's speak about the great universal concepts of justice, which no doubt are very important. But something was missing over there. And it may be that because of that reason, that therefore in certain circles of the modern Orthodox world, these little issues in halacha were not always taken too serious. After Rabbi Soloveitchik, once he published this particular book of his, and he spoke about it, we indeed have seen some kind of a shift taking place within the modern Orthodox world, for example in Yeshiva University,
where now there is a greater emphasis on the little details of the halakha, which a generation earlier was not yet discussed. I once read, in the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik, but I only read it in his name, I did not see that he writes this himself, that even in the Voloshiner Yeshiva, the famous Yeshiva Voloshin, in the old country, as they say, where the greatest talents came together, even there was some kind of a problem like that. Our famous Rav Kook learned there, and you know how they called him? They called him the Fromer. In that yeshiva, they called him the Frum one, the religious one. It says something about the conditions of these days. On the other side, and this is my personal opinion, when it comes to the general ideology of modern orthodoxy, there is tremendous beauty there. The way how it tries to interact, how it makes use of the world, how, especially again, Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Lam, Rabbi Cook, and Rabbi Hirsch, are people who indeed were able to see the finger of God in everything far beyond the little Jewish world. They had a universal view, and the universal view was a total religious view. Nothing was left out. And that made this particular ideology incredibly attractive. But then we have the other side of the story, the Haredi community. I live myself with one leg in that community and another leg in the other community. Sometimes this is a little schizophrenic. It's not so easy to live in both these places. But I'm close to both of these worlds. I pray with both of these worlds. I hear. I understand. I do not understand. But what must be said is that the Haredi world has been much more particular about its way how it dealt with halacha. There every little detail counts. There they will look in every little prat, in every smallest matter. There the issue of how much you exactly eat of the matzah on Pesach night is a major issue. I know people in the Haredi world who before the Seder starts, before it is Pesach, they will make sure that they cut off enough of matzah or they've worked exactly out that they, God forbid, would not eat too little. They make sure that the cup of the Kiddush cup, which they use on that night, the four cups, are exactly the size required, and they know exactly how much of it they have to swallow afterwards, because so the halakha says. That's the Haredi world. But the Haredi world has another side to itself, and that indeed is that it has been cutting itself in perhaps more and more away from the world around us. The walls get higher, taller, thicker. And there's very little relationship now with the world out there. And because of that reason, the Haredi world is losing some of its people, as much as the modern Orthodox world loses their people in two different directions. We know about facts where modern Orthodox children walk out altogether, or they become Haredi. The middle road is somehow lost in all this. And the question is, indeed, is there really a middle road? Can it exist? What is it all about? My answer tonight will be yes. But I agree that it is a difficult road. And it's definitely not a very popular road. To see things black-white is always easier on both sides than to know that there is somewhere, something in the middle which obviously is more complex. But both, and that's the topic of tonight, is they struggle in two opposite directions. The problem within the Haredi world, in many ways, is that the halakha became the only way in which one expresses very often one's religious commitment. as much as it may be lacking in the modern Orthodox world, one may even argue, but I will later somehow balance what I'm saying over here, that there is too much commitment to the halakha without understanding what that halakha is all about. Without understanding the spirit behind it. Call it the music, the art behind it. And therefore, this community is losing people. And then there are the others, the modern Orthodox, which lose people. Why? Because the commitment is not always genuine. The children look into that community, and I can tell you a lot about this, and say, these people are not always serious enough about halakha. And we can neither live with that. Our children are honest, the younger generation. And they obviously think still in terms of black-white. My question is this. Is an increase in halachic observance automatically an increase in spirituality, in devotion? Is the way of living halacha really automatically making us to come closer to God? If it is, how does it work? If it is not, then what do we need to do about this? We know quite well, we all suffer from this, including myself, that very often halacha becomes a routine observance. I do it more or less automatically. Very often it became a kind of behaviorism, an external way of doing things, an external conduct. Abraham Joshua Heschel writes in one of his books that there are people who believe that halakha is some kind of spiritual, or better, behavior physics. I just do the thing like a robot. And as I do that, and I tell myself, if I just follow all the laws exactly as it is stated within the Jewish tradition, within the halakha itself, within the Shulchan Aruch and the Codex of Jewish Law, then I am considered to be a deeply religious Jew. But I would very much challenge that this is true. And that is that what the halakha had in mind, or if we want to say what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had in mind at the time when he gave us the halakha. What are we looking for? We are looking, after all, first of all, for an encounter with God. A feeling that we live in His presence. We know quite well that we are looking, and the Torah says this very clearly, for Kedusha in our lives. For holiness in our lives. This is the great phrase, Kedushim tiyuhu ki ani Hashem Kadosh. You shall be holy because I, God, am holy. This is the ultimate goal of the Jewish people. And this is a very general statement, and somehow the whole halachic system has to fit into this and to bring us to this holiness. But I don't know about you, but I know quite a few people who, for example, have been eating their lives without an exception, always kosher. They always keep Shabbat. But if you ask me if I have an impression that they're holy, I must say I have my greatest doubts. Which means to say that it does not seem to work automatically. It does not mean to say just keep the 613 commandments and you will be holy. There's somewhere something missing in between. And that missing in between is perhaps the most crucial issue today within Jewish education. Because if we are not able to teach that to ourselves and to our children, the linkage between the feeling, the knowledge that one lives a life of kedusha, of holiness, on one side, and the need to keep every little halakha, if we are not able to explain to ourselves and to others what that linkage is and how we can build that linkage and how can we can inspire ourselves to come to that, then we are losing out on the main point of why we are Jewish. After all, let's be honest, the halakha is not to be performed. The halakha is there to transform. It has to create a different kind of personality. We have to grow from the halachic experience. not just in a form of behaviorism in a form of sacred physics, to continue to be. Okay, we continue. Heschel, a little later, makes a very critical comment related to this about another thinker of tremendous importance, this time a Jew, a man who was very close to him, in fact, very interestingly so, and that was Martin Buber. Martin Buber and Heschel worked together for a long time. But Martin Buber had completely done away with the halakha. He believed that the way how you encounter God is something which basically you have to decide for on your own. And Heschel constantly kept on saying that this will lead nowhere. It will not happen that in that way you create a community of people who are committed to something, because it indeed evaporates in the air. To be a religion which really works, it must be a religion which is in a living flesh and blood community. Religion is not the same as spirituality as such. But religion is something which has physical existence. You know, interesting, the Greeks, they stressed right thinking. The Christians stressed right belief. And the Jewish people emphasized right living. And right living is more than thinking. It is more than believing. It is the sum total of the existential situation in which we live. But that's also the reason why the halakha is a difficult thing to undertake, because it overtakes you totally. And there are moments, I don't know about you, but I can speak about me, that I say, leave me alone. But it can't be left alone. You know why? Because I can't be left alone from God. There is no escape from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if there is no escape from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then I constantly live in His presence. And to live constantly in His presence is an incredible art. And far from easy. You can't escape God. You can't take a pose on it. You can't take a vacation on it. So therefore you can't take a vacation on halakha. I remember as a kid by my parents at home, many people came, Jews and non-Jews. I remember a Christian once coming in. I think I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And he said that he had been on vacation. So my father asked him, so did you go to church on Sunday in your vacation? Did you say the prayers before the meal and after the meal? I never forget the answer. He said, no, I was on vacation. I was completely shocked by that statement. It didn't make any sense, even to a child of 7, 8, 9 years old. You go on vacation from God? And that's the reason why indeed the halakha is a difficult thing to live with, because it is difficult to live with God. God is not an easy personality. Heschel uses somewhere else another beautiful expression. He has such poetry, this man, unbelievable. He says the Jewish tradition is the theology of the common deed. It creates a situation where in the most trivial issue becomes an encounter with God. And therefore the most trivial issue needs to be sanctified. I had many years ago in Amsterdam, where I was born, an open debate with a Reform rabbi, who happens to be a friend of mine, but I disagree with everything he said. Very fine person. And we had a debate, we made up a debate. So in the middle of debate, speaking obviously about Orthodox Judaism and Reform Judaism. So he said, oh, in a certain moment, he says to me, tell me something. I just heard that Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, one of the great halachic authorities, wrote a long piece, a responsum, on the question, if you're allowed to open up on Shabbat your fridge, yes or no, the fridge there. Because the moment you open up the door, hot air gets in, the motor starts to work, you may have been violating the Shabbat. And there's a longer responsum of him over there. This is many years ago. So he said to me, the Reform Rabbi, he said to me, don't you have other problems? And I said to him, Baruch Hashem, I have this problem. And I hope, thank you, I hope that I will continue to have these problems. And I tell you why. Because a little trivial act like opening a fridge on a holy day like the Shabbat is an art. Because I happen to do this in God's time. I borrow a moment of the life which he gave me, and perhaps I don't even deserve it. Shall I not for a moment, then specially once in a week, think for a moment about the fact, you know, how interesting. A, there is a concept called fridge. I don't take it for granted. My grandparents didn't have one. The second thing is, there's concept of food. It's the fact that I can move my arm. I can do loads of things which, in the weekdays, I never for one moment contemplate about this. But Shabbat is the day of contemplation. So the halacha tells me just before I want to grasp the door to open it, says, wait a moment. You are doing an act in the presence of God. Sanctify it. For a moment, think about it. Can you do this, yes or no? This is trivial, yes. But the world is full of trivial acts. But it is in that world that God happens to be present. And the great art is to indeed at that moment find its kedusha and to sanctify the act. We have to realize one thing. That obviously you and I, but I can only speak about myself. I cannot live the whole time like that. That is to say, every moment to think about God, I realize is very hard. And there are only moments when that really gets me. There are only moments when I get indeed overwhelmed by the greatness, the royalty of God. And there are also moments when I keep halacha, and I'm careful about yes or not opening the fridge, that I don't have that experience. And you may ask at that very moment, so why keeping it? But I answer you that indeed the routine of living by this way, in this way, you know what it does? I may not be feeling for it at the time. I may not be living up for it at the time. I'm removed at that very moment. But what I do know is that because I have this certain routine, it again opens the possibility within my heart to encounter God. This does not come automatically, but because I've created within my own system, in the behavior, in the routine, a particular way of living my life, that in case God grasps me, let's say, that at that moment I have indeed, there's something within me, I've created a concept, a condition within myself, perhaps subconscious, that in case it happens well. And if I would not live in this kind of routine, where I'm careful on Shabbat about doing certain things, then when it comes the moment that I have this spontaneous moment, I may miss it altogether because I was not ready for it. Because I didn't have the preparation for it. So I don't think the halacha always keeps on telling us, think about God. But create a routine that in case you are able to think about God, that it is able to sink in well. That for that moment, it becomes a real experience. To live with God is very hard. And therefore, by the way, and I think it's important to mention this, we should be careful, and sometimes we do see some things like that happen in the Orthodox community, that people are so incredibly nervous about living their life in according to the halacha, that it stagnates them, instead of it flows. We have to realize one thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us in a way that we need to be relaxed at the same time as well. Not to be spectated at every moment, being nervous about the next act, which I may do right or may do wrong. No, there is rachmanut, there is after all mercy on the side of God. But I must make sure that whenever there is an opportunity to meet him, that I'm ready to meet him, and that I do by way of living to this in according to this halacha. Even when I'm not so connected at that moment. That's, by the way, the meaning, as you quite well know, of why when the Jews stood at Sinai, they said, Na'aseh v'nishma. What does it mean, Na'aseh v'nishma? The deeper meaning, obviously, is if you do something, you also start to hear the something. You hear in the deed, Franz Rosenzweig once said. You hear in the deed. Hearing alone is not good enough. But if I act in this hearing by way of the deed, then it makes an impression on my soul. It engraves itself in this, in perhaps that heart of mine. By the way, I once saw a beautiful interpretation. I think it was in a Hasidic work. You know, the Pirkei Avot tells us, Lo ha-midrash hu ha-ikar ela ha-ma'aseh. It is not the midrash, the learning, but it is the deed which is the ikar. Kol shema'asaf, anybody whose deeds, merubim mechochmato, whose deeds are greater than his chochma, than his wisdom, chochmato mitkayemet. His chochma, his will, or better, his wisdom will stay with him. But if his chochma is more than his deeds, the chochma will not stay with him. This is a very remarkable statement. The chochma does not stay just like that. It's only when there is more deeds. So somebody once said that this is what Moshe Rabbeinu had in mind when he said, or better, when the Jewish people spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, they said, if God continues to speak to us at Sinai, remember the story? And we keep on hearing his voice, we all die. I spoke yesterday about it from a different perspective. We all die. So one of the great Hasidic thinkers says, you know what that means? If we hear everything from God ourselves, it will only enter into our intellect. It will stay there. We will understand it fully. But particularly because we understand it fully, there will be little emotional relationship. Because sometimes a Jew is asked to make a leap of a deed. Not a leap of faith, but a leap of a deed. Heschel wrote once, because he needs to know that he has to do more than he understands, so that he understands more than he does. There's a dimension here that you can only know certain things, not by intellect, but by being taken over by the whole concept. That you're living in that particular world. And chochma alone won't do that. The ma'aseh has an interesting thing. We come to that in a moment. A ma'aseh, a deed, seems to impress in our soul something which the chochma alone, the wisdom alone, is not able to do. In fact, this is a very famous statement made by Rabbi Aaron Me Barcelona. We do not know, even know who he is. Great Sephardi thinker who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch, the Book of Education, which is a classic. Where he writes, when he asks the question, why is it so much that we live by halacha to express our religious beliefs? And he says, know that a person is influenced according to his actions. His heart and all his thoughts are drawn after his deeds. Our thoughts follow our deeds, in which he is occupied, whether good or bad. And then he makes a famous statement, which is quoted so many times over, for after one's actions, the human heart is drawn. What we think, in many ways, is what we do. Saying it a little different, what it means to say is that whatever we do enters into our thinking. We create mentality by doing acts. If you do the right things, after a time you think the right things. If you do the wrong things, after a time you will think the wrong things. It's only that in modern psychology they fully understand the meaning of these words. But this was written, and in fact the Torah is full of these statements, that we are, our mentality is so much made up by what we do, not just by what we think. By the way, I should mention that, interestingly enough, Henri Bergson, don't know if you know that name, one of the great French philosophers, was a Jew, but had little to do with the Jewish tradition, in this fantastic work of his called The Creative Evolution, L'Evolution Créatise, fantastic work, where he writes about many things, but one of them is indeed the relationship between the deed and the machshava, the thought process, the very spirituality of man. He writes something very similar. He says, it is right to say that what we do depends on what we are. But it is also necessary to add that we are in many measures what we do, and that we are constantly, by way of our deeds, recreate ourselves. So now we may be able to understand a little bit more what that halacha is all about. Halacha is not trying to teach us just like that how to live our lives. Halacha is trying to transform us to be compatible with, to use another English word, the ineffable. That what is beyond, that we know, there are, as we all know, there are things going on which we cannot put words to. They're unexpressed. It is not so much that the halacha deals with the common sense, but it deals with the unspoken in ourselves, which we have to allow to come out. It is trying to bring eternity in your day-to-day life, in the trivialities of human existence. We live our lives in the borrowed time from God. And it is only that way that we start to understand a little bit of what the halacha has in mind. I must tell you something else over here. And I have to be very careful how I do this. And I do this a little trembling. I mentioned before, Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote this beautiful book called The Halachic Man. Isha Halacha. Difficult book to read. If you don't know German philosophy, it is hard to follow this book. I read it a few times, and obviously, who is not deeply impressed by it? But to be all honest, and I say this incredible humility on my side, because, and I really mean this, I don't come to his feet in any way. But there are moments in that book where Rabbi Soloveitchik breaks out in poetry, which is really beautiful, and he brings the whole of the halachic view together. But I must say, there are also parts in this book which I find very limited. Where, and again, I have to be very careful how I say this, his Lithuanian mathematics comes in. How suddenly it becomes rigid, a rigidity. It has to be done like this. And then I miss the poetry. And it's obviously because that's the way how human beings are. Rabbi Soloveitchik is somebody who had tremendous emotions and he wrote them down. Very few rabbis have done that in the same way as he did that. And that's so marvelous about him. But it is also true, and I've been giving this to some of my students to read parts of it, and that is that indeed, you know, it is beautiful, it is great, it has poetry, but it has not yet broken out completely into the world of spirituality as I would like to see it. But who am I? I still make the comment purely because, in case you read it, remember, you're not the only one who may find passages there which is difficult to handle. We have to realize another thing. Halacha cannot stand on its own. Halacha is the center of Jewish life. But we have always to remember that there is something, what we call in Hebrew, agada, the whole non-halachic side of life. And Akkadah in somehow is the spirit, indeed the music behind the halakha. And you cannot make a distinction really between them. I found it always, and I still find it till this very day, very, very problematic. When in yeshivot, they sometimes drop the Akkadah and they continue with in the Gemara and they continue with the halachic issues. One should never do and allow anything like that. Anyway, my good friends, I add one or two points I've been told to make an end to this. I just started. But I want you to know this. When we look into the world of science, and we look into the world of detail in science, we know that scientists are totally taken in sometimes by studying an insect. The little details. And if you ask them about it, they're totally fascinated by it. I've spoken to people like that. And if you speak to other people about it, you tell them, you know, this scientist is busy already for years looking into one insect. Some people say, the man must be crazy. Yes, I understand that. If you don't see the poetry, then it is crazy. That's exactly the situation with halakha as well. For the religious Jew, the detail, how do we say in English? God is found in the detail. It are the little things which make it delicate. The little things which make it special. It's not that what is general is also superficial. I think that the halachic authorities at the time, when they started to make issues about how many gram of matzah you have to eat, they were extremely great psychologists. They said, you know, we want you to get to understand the greatest, the beauty of the mitzvah of eating a matzah. If we just tell you, eat something, you don't get the point. But the moment I'm going to tell you so many grams, wait a moment, you speak about art. Because art is made from little issues. Then the story becomes a different one. Then I suddenly start to realize and understand that that is what life is all about. Because God is found in the detail. My dear friends, I have to stop. We have to bring this concept back into the classroom, in our hearts, in a way how we teach the Jewish tradition. I ask, and it is a critical question, are our yeshivot doing this today? Are our schools doing this today in the Haredi world, or for that reason in the modern Orthodox world? There's much to be done there. We must do it, because if we don't do these sort of things, our children will not be inspired. And nothing is more dangerous than when they are not inspired. Inspiration is the ultimate issue, the linkage between the deed and the inner emotional side of man. And as I said before, it can be done. It's far from easy to do that. But we have to teach ourselves that every little matter is a sacred matter. Every deed what man does has to become a sacred deed. Every moment it is another encounter with the ultimate greatness of God. If we do that, then I'm sure that there's a good future to the Jewish tradition. If we don't, we are killing it. And we are not ever permitted to do so. And let us ultimately understand one more thing about halakha, and there I stop. All of us got life which we did not deserve. We were not asked to do any act at the time before we came into this world. It was given to us. And you know what that is? That's the greatest embarrassment of all. That you and I live my life. We enjoy, hopefully, life, as many of us do. And we constantly take it for granted. We do like, we say in Hebrew, magiali. It comes to me. We have to realize one thing, nothing comes to us. Things only come to us when we deserve them. How do we make the great moments of our lives, how do they become deserved? How do we create some, how do we discharge, I would nearly say, something of the debt which we owe God for being here? The answer is, that's what halakha is all about. Halakha is a response to God that says, God, you know what? You gave us all. We have one task. To see you in all this. And how do we see you in all this? By acting you out. And how do we act you out? By way of what the halakha requires from us. My dear friends, I stop over here, and the rabbi and the professor will have to invite me again to continue this story. Thank you.
I don't think that's a problem. We're just going to need a travel schedule. We'll find out when you're in and around. We'll take a very short, couple of questions. You can have involved us under 10 minutes of questions. Then we'll do our halakhic obligation of Maariv and that's it. So we have a couple of questions. We'll keep both the questions and the answers brief.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Cardozo. This is going to be slightly off the topic, but I hope you'll allow me the liberty to veer just a little bit. There seems to be two areas of Jewish law, two major areas called Torah and Derech Eretz. Why are there two separate bodies or two seemingly parts of the big picture? Why not just one whole area of Torah law? Why seemingly main Torah and Derech Eretz? Would you be able to comment on that in this context?
Well, I can only say it is one and the same. It is one and the same. But because we sometimes make the mistake of believing that certain forms of proper behavior are not part of our religious way in which we need to live our lives, the rabbis felt therefore the need to emphasize the concept of Derech Eretz by using a separate word, but obviously it is built in.
Any other questions? Yes, Mr. Freed.
I think that you were far too charitable for the Haredi community. A number of aspects. I think you touched on it briefly when you talked about the book tradition creates rigidity. Article about Nachum Friedman has done studies in this area and also by the Times Foundation on the transformation of Orthodoxy post-Holocaust. And the shiurim, which you started off with, how the meticulous the shiurim are collected, have been around, as the Times Foundation points out, since Rabbi Eder's time, and had no success in the Orthodox community. Most people, including the Haredim, ignored the shiurim. It wasn't collected. So Nietzsche popularized it after the Holocaust, like it gained popularity. Friedman had an article called The Lost Kiddush Cup of the Chafetz Chaim.
Right.
If the Chafetz Chaim was alive today, he wouldn't be meeting the shiurim of the Haredi community. But far worse than that aspect is that they confuse Agadita with Halakha. They tried to make Agadita apply at the same standard as Halakha and have created a tremendous schism amongst all Orthodox as a result of that. And that's not, again, into their lack of observance in many areas of Allah, which I won't even comment. I think there's at least a collective of the modern Orthodox. Any comments on that? I could go on.
My comments will be very short. First of all, I've read the different essays and the articles you just mentioned. I would only say one thing. It is true that in the earlier days, these issues of the shiurim, the measurements and so on, definitely did not play the same role as it does since the days of the Chazon Ish, definitely true. That doesn't mean to say that therefore the shiurim don't exist within the halakha. Yes, they're definitely there. If they are smaller or larger, and that the cup of the Chofetz Chaim definitely would not have lived up to the cup of many of the poskim of today, that's definitely true. By the way, a lot to do with the fact that the poverty in these days was obviously much more than we can allow ourselves, much more wine than in the days when the Chofetz Chaim used to live. But I would only say, and I also agree that the Haredi community is selective in many ways as the modern Orthodox is, I would only say, and once more, I'm not here at all to defend that community, is that I see a certain amount of commitment in that world towards these selective mitzvot, and I wouldn't mind to see a little bit more of that in the modern Orthodox as well. If the modern Orthodox would perhaps be a little bit more committed like the Haredi, and the Haredi would think a little bit more than the modern Orthodox, I would feel a little better. But I agree, there's much more to be said about the topic. I'm aware of that. Very much.
Last question. Then privately, and what can we do? on the next trip, yeah.
I haven't had a express this, but maybe you'll catch the idea. But you're speaking out to what I think might be a modern Orthodox crowd. I think, I'd be wrong. And the message I'm getting out of this last hour is put a little bit more halakha into the life, right? And more commitment to halakha. But as much commitment as I could put into halakha, the voice of an ultra-Orthodox member would probably be the louder one, since he'll say to me, the color you're wearing is not proper, and therefore I can't accept you as a proper 100% Jew, right? Whereas if I take a lesson after this class, I think I may not be wearing the black hat or the beard and the tzitzit over whatever the exact rule is that they're keeping today, but the voice of Judaism might still be their voice, and we're saying it's too rigid, right? We're saying it's lacking the maybe the understanding or the acceptance that it needs. So how does Judaism acquire that representation when the guy who screams loudest is the one who's heard?
I'm not interested in who is shouting the loudest. I'm interested who is giving me the most correct interpretation of what this should be all about. Right? The way how we externally appear obviously has something to say about this and our commitments. That's definitely true. But we have to be extremely careful if we're not going to make that the major issue. And obviously, in the Haredi community, more and more that happens to be the case. I tell you something else. I once suggested in Yerushalayim, in a conference, I suggested to the modern Orthodox that they should start to wear the garments of the Haredim, and the Haredim should start to use the more modern dress of the modern Orthodox. Why? Because somebody once made an interesting comment to me, which I will never forget. A young man who had become a Baal Teshuvah and became very Haredi. So one day he walks into the yeshiva, which at the time I was teaching, in his Haredi outfit. And I was shocked. I said, why do you do that? Yesterday you walked like this, today this is artificial. He gave me a very interesting answer. He said, I'll tell you why. Because I used to stand in front of shops looking to magazines when I was walking around with the normal clothes like everybody else. But now that I look like a Haredi, I can't do that anymore, and by that I stop myself from doing that. There's a certain wisdom in this. You have to know yourself. So sometimes, indeed, an external expression is not so much external in the sense that I want to show off, but it may indeed help you to overcome certain problems with your Yetzirah, as we call it. It's definitely true. You represent something. The moment you walk around as a kippah, you can't do everything anymore. People will look to you. How can it be that the religious Jew does things like that? So definitely it plays a role. But the moment we are going to make it, as is today taking place in the Haredi world, where this becomes so incredibly important, what kind of black hat you have and how you exactly dress, right? What has this to do with the Jewish tradition? And I'm saying, since the modern Orthodox are so much more interacting with the modern world, let them put on a dress which is more conservative, so to make sure that they know the borderlines when they walk around in the world over there. But the Haredim, who in any way live in their own world, they really don't need it.
Okay, thank you very much. I think as we enter into Rosh Hashanah and we daven a lot, which is Brasilevichik always has pointed out the Avodah Shevelay based on the Rambam, the spiritual component of davening, and I think combining the spiritual and the halachic is a difficult, difficult challenge we always have to work through. And we thank you for your inspiring words and hopefully help on the road on that path. So I want to thank you all for coming. We'll daven Marv in about in 5 minutes. If you want to take a cup or two just before we finish, if anyone wants to order tapes who wasn't here yesterday, you're here today, you don't need the tape. But if you weren't here yesterday, we had a 3.5 hour hearing sparring on a totally different topic. We can order tapes. We have our program next week, Dr. Schroeder, from a different perspective, the world of halakha and science, etc., and their upcoming, you know, programs. And I want to wish you all, those who I don't see, Rosh Hashanah, even though it's late, it's close. Whenever it comes, we aren't ready, the problem. So I want to wish everybody a good year, a year of peace for us and all of Israel.
Amen.
Thank you very much. If anybody would like to join Rabbi Cardoza's email list, there are forms out there. We're signing it as a party. We can link them all.
Shalom. Oh, how nice. How nice. I remember your face. Yeah, sure.
Thank you.